It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We heard the more bad economic news this week. In just 3 weeks, the past 3 weeks, more than 16 million Americans have lost their jobs. So this hour, we want to offer some tips for those struggling with financial security. Any of our listeners joining us, ISU Extension Specialist Cindy Fletcher. She's a professor, also Extension Specialist in Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. Cindy, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Cindy has all kinds of tips about revising a budget, prioritizing bills, paying down debt, connecting with family resources. We want to entertain your questions this hour. What are you struggling with? The type of financial woes caused by COVID-19? What's keeping you up at night? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Also entertaining your COVID-19 medical questions. We have with us Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines to help us tackle those questions. Dr. Allen, so good of you to be with us.
Thank you. Glad to be with you as well, and appreciate the chance to talk about COVID-19.
Okay, we'll be having questions via email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. The telephone, 1-866-780-9100. Also, questions submitted by listeners through our live blog at iowapublicradio.org. It's a good way to keep up to date on the latest in the COVID-19 pandemic, and also to submit a question. Let's find out a little bit more about what you have to offer, Cindy, because we don't want to say promise the moon and not deliver there. So tell us a little more specifically about what you can offer this hour, what types of questions and situations you can address and react to.
Well, I'm glad to basically cover some basics about how to begin to think about dealing with personal and family finances in this very uncertain time. People who are struggling need, I think, to keep in mind some very basic management strategies. And then I also hope to talk about an initiative that Human Sciences Extension at Iowa State University is offering to provide one-on-one educational consultations to Iowans in coming weeks as we all deal with this uncertain economic future.
Okay, before we get to questions, why don't you share those two things? Let's get to a few basics. What would you say are the basics? A family, a person suddenly beset by financial problems, a job lost completely or partially. How do we recalibrate? How do we gain our footing and feel good so that we can sleep at night and get us through at least whatever foreseeable stretch of time we have?
You're implying that finances can be a stressor, and that's obvious. So I'd offer three basic ideas to consider. First of all, understand what you control and what you can't control, and focus your time, your energy on the things you can control. Moving ahead from that, seek out trustworthy, accurate information. And that's very difficult right now because of the rapidity of change of the information that we're all receiving. And then also the misinformation or information that was accurate last week now has been revised. And then the third thing I would suggest is make a plan or revise your plan. For too many of us, our financial situations have changed, and sorting out a plan where to start is where our extension staff can take on a very practical and I hope helpful role. We've decided that our 11 family finance extension specialists who are scattered across the state now are working at home and are going to shift a lot of their time to talking one-on-one by phone, or they can answer email questions to help families make a plan, answer their questions, and begin to get a sense of really where to start. It's very easy to feel overwhelmed in the current situation, and our extension educators will not provide financial advice, and by that I mean giving specific recommendations of products or services, but can be a listening ear to help you think through ideas and options to move forward with a basic plan.
Mm-hmm. And how do our listeners get in touch with your extension specialists there?
The easiest way is for them to call the Iowa Concern Hotline. That's a hotline that Extension has operated since the farm crisis. And by calling the following number, 800-447-1985, the staff at the hotline will ask where this person lives. Then they will put them in contact with the family finance staff person that serves that community.
Okay, let me repeat that question. I will at the end of the time. If you don't get to, perhaps you would like to share it one-on-one with an ISU Extension specialist, 800-447-1985. 800-447-1985. ISU Extension specialist, as Cindy mentioned, no financial advice, but really help there in terms of helping you think through whatever problem you may have financially so that you can have some footing here in these uncertain times. 800-447-1985. Let's go to some of the questions submitted through our website, iowapublicradio.org, the live COVID-19 blog formula form that you can fill out and submit a question. Here's a question from Katie. Perhaps you can help here, Cindy. She writes, my bank is not offering forbearance due to hardship caused by COVID-19. Is this legal, she asks. They are not even willing to lower payments temporarily. I have a credit card debt for medications like insulin. That debt is about $5,000. What programs are available for Iowa residents who have lost their jobs or have had to quit due to being infected? I am currently on disability, but it isn't nearly enough to cover my bills and mortgage. Katie, thank you for submitting that, and we wish you well in getting through these extra problems that you've had. What can you add, Cindy, to help send Katie along?
I would suggest that while there are forbearance programs that have been established for some specific debts, mortgages, eviction suspension for rent payments in certain cases, student loans, a credit card bill would not fall in that case. But what I would encourage her to do is she could call an extension staff person. They could gather some additional information. She should, it sounds like she's already contacted the creditor, but perhaps with a plan for making some payment or a plan for how she can address these bills in the future, that creditor may be willing to make arrangements. So many creditors realize we're all in this boat together and are willing to make adjustments. Mm-hmm. So communicate and then make a plan, be realistic, and put that communication and plan in action. Probably the worst thing to do is to ignore the situation, and it sounds like she's taken a first step but may need some additional assistance to put a plan for potentially repaying or beginning to make payments in place.
Okay, Katie, we hope that helped. If not, as Cindy said, please do get in contact with ISU Extension Specialists, 800-447-1985. That's the Iowa, what hotline? What is the name of the hotline?
It's Iowa Concern.
Iowa Concern Hotline, 800-447-1985. One more of these questions, then we'll turn over to a medical question and get to some of Dr. Allen's thoughts. Here's a question from James via our IPR website. Are renters safe from eviction during this epidemic? Are we as building owners safe from bank foreclosure, as we will not be able to pay our mortgage?
That is one of the most common questions that we are hearing, concern about evictions. If an individual has a lease, there is currently an Iowa moratorium on evictions through the end of this month, and it may be extended. The CARES Act also extends a moratorium on evictions currently into July for housing that they refer to as covered housing that has some connection to the federal government, a federal loan to purchase that housing, or a federally insured loan. So those are two examples of actions that are in place to provide some protection for renters. I would encourage renters who have that concern to contact Iowa Legal Aid. If eligible, they can provide assistance to renters and provide some legal advice. If an individual that calls Iowa Legal Aid or looks at their website does not qualify as a low-income person, they can connect you to attorneys who are willing to have short discussions with Iowans on a pro bono basis.
If you've just joined us, my guest, Cindy Fletcher, professor and extension specialist in human development and family studies at Iowa State University. We're fielding questions from those who are struggling with financial security, and there are plenty of us out there. The dramatic change of events due to the COVID-19 virus have, we know for sure, as of this week, 16 million Americans thrown into the category of unemployed, jobless. We also are fielding questions, your COVID-19 medical questions. Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines is with us this hour. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Dr. Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines. Let's talk before we go to any medical questions here. How has the pandemic impacted your operations there at Unity Point Health?
Well, we certainly had to pivot our focus and resources toward responding to the COVID-19 situation. Learning from our world, we know that this creates a great impact on hospitals and patients and providers and staff, both in the hospital and space as well as in the ambulatory space. And so we have dedicated our focus and our resources and our time toward being able to prepare for what others ahead of us have experienced as far as the COVID-19 pandemic. And as such, the benefit we've had is we've had some time to do that because we weren't the first to experience this, and we've learned a lot from those ahead of us, particularly on the West Coast that dealt with this ahead of Iowa as far as the COVID-19 surge situation.
Can you tell us if you have any patients infected with confirmed is infected or presumed infected?
Yes, we have. Uni Point Health has had COVID patients under our system's care at various places in Iowa, and we're meeting those folks' needs currently.
Uh-huh. Any of them in the ICU? Can you reveal that?
With COVID-19, a significant amount of those patients can stay in the ambulatory space. Of those that do end up in the hospital, about 20%, we believe, that get COVID infection can be hospitalized. 5 to 10% of those may end up in the intensive care units. And so we do have patients in the intensive care unit, and we have patients that are also in the regular hospital rooms in our hospitals.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing in terms of supplies for PPEs, personal protective equipment, ventilators, anything that you would need or your healthcare workers would need, doctors and nurses, to treat someone with a COVID infection?
Well, it's certainly been clear nationally on the news that all the things you mentioned have in various regions, various areas of the country, been in short supply. As part of our preparation for COVID-19, coming to Iowa, we've spent a great deal of time partnering with some of our creative opportunities in the community to try and obtain PPE and those sorts of personal protective equipment devices we need to take care of patients with COVID. We've done extensive training on making sure our staff and our physicians and APPs know when to use them and when not to, so that we can conserve the supplies we have. And we've also, in preparation, made ourselves more able to have the capacity to take care of patients who end up in our hospitals. And that has allowed us, I think, to have time to get ready for the patients that are going to need our ventilators and our intensive care unit beds.
Fielding your questions, your COVID-19 medical questions, Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines with us. Also questions for those struggling with financial security. Cindy Fletcher of ISU Extension with us. Let's go to our phones. Will is joining us from Ankeny. Hi, Will.
Yeah, hi, Ben.
Hi. Yeah. Welcome to the program. What are you facing there that you want to share?
Well, I'm not really facing anything, but I've heard from a couple of sources that the actual pathology of the COVID-19 is attacking the heme portion of the red blood cells, the heme, the porphyrin, and it's damaging that, and it's reducing the capability of the red blood cells to carry oxygen, which is causing the desaturation, and then the lack of, or the reduced gaseous exchange across the alveolar surfaces is causing the deterioration of the alveoli. And I just wondering if there's any credence to this. I haven't heard it from the WHO or the CDC. It's just been online stuff.
Okay.
And you never can tell.
Okay, Will, thank you very much for your question. You may be above the heads of many of us, but we'll have Dr. Allen tackle your question.
I would say in answer to your question, I have not seen that transparently, and I would agree with you that based on our view of the CDC updates and our dependence on our infectious disease specialists and intensive care physicians who are caring for patients with COVID, that's not something I'm aware of. We do know there are significant impacts on the physiology of the lung, obviously, hence the need for ventilators in these patients. It's also, you describe actually what I think we're facing with this particular situation, and that is it's a constantly changing landscape. We're learning about COVID-19 as we go, and we continue to learn more and more about it. The good news is that there are a lot of people who have eyes on this and are quickly with their learnings trying to take better care of patients with COVID-19.
Dr. Allen, Jerry in Davenport, one of our listeners, submitted this through our website. He says he's a 64-year-old male. He's been on blood thinner. Now, I know we don't want to diagnose over the air, but perhaps you can speak generally to people's immune system, because Jerry's question is my immune system compromised in any way by being on a blood thinner? Can you tell us, having your immune system compromised at this time is not a good thing. What are some basic ideas about keeping a strong immune system? What to avoid? Diet would be good. Exercise, of course, I assume.
Well, the question he asked as far as immune status, hard, I agree, for me to offer any advice in that space based just on the fact someone's on a blood thinner. I will tell you, though, that based on the screening criteria of both the CDC and our state health departments, that there are a number of things that are associated with increased risk with COVID-19, one being age, the other chronic medical conditions, diabetes, heart disease, which obviously is a broad swath of possible diagnoses, immune medications, COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and chronic kidney disease. I think folks with those types of clinical conditions should obviously be in contact with their primary care physician or specialist so they can provide direction from the individual who knows them best. And I would also add, as you said, Ben, that obviously it's a time to make sure you're well-rested, that your nutrition's good, and that you're particularly following the recommendations about protecting yourself and self-isolating yourself and limiting your visits and your trips outside of your home. And if you can have someone else partner with you to provide an ability to get things for you outside of your home, that's all the better, because I think that's been the single most important thing we've been able to do to decrease the spread of COVID-19 is our ability to practice social distancing.
Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines. Of course, Unity Point Health in Des Moines, a larger institution. After the break, we'll also be welcomed by someone from a smaller from the town of Clarinda, and we'll be talking a little bit about the financial health of the smaller rural hospitals and medical centers. Dr. Allen, perhaps before we go, you can share a little bit about how this, if you know, is affecting Unity Point Health's bottom line. We have what the governor has said some days now, that no more elective surgeries, right?
Well, that decision of not performing essential surgeries, as we call them, was really based on Unity Point Health's desire to make sure that we could meet the needs of the COVID-19 patients that were coming our way. And, you know, as part of that, you have to be proactive to decrease the utilization of your hospitals, particularly around protective, personal protective equipment and operating rooms and ventilators. It's what we're doing because that's what we need to do to meet the needs of our patients. And we're monitoring that. But at this point, our focus is on making sure we can help the patients that have COVID-19.
Indeed. Dr. Dan Allen with us of Unity Point Health in Des Moines. He'll be with us in the second half hour, as will Cindy Fletcher, Extension Specialist at Iowa State University, fielding your questions. If you're struggling with financial security or your COVID-19 medical questions. Back in just a moment, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We're back with more River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Of course, many of us struggling through the past few weeks financially, for instance, and that's why we're offering this hour tips from Cindy Fletcher, professor and extension specialist in human development and family studies at Iowa State University, talking about how we can sustain ourselves through this time if we're sort of on the edge or gone over the edge in terms of financial security. 1-866-780-9100. Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines with us as well, tackling your COVID-19 medical questions. Also, briefly joining us now, Chuck Nordyke is with us, Chief Executive Officer of Clarinda Regional Health Center. Clarinda, about a town of, I think about 5,000, right, Chuck, in southwest yeah. Iowa, of course.
Yes, 5,000.
Okay. Give us a quick snapshot of how you are being impacted by this pandemic there at your health center.
Sure. The quote of being the most prepared to be unprepared is probably most appropriate. We've implemented as many things as we can to be prepared for what could happen. Unfortunately, because of what is going on and the fear that a lot of people have and the social distancing that people are partaking in, we're kind of sitting on our hands right now just waiting.
You are.
Our visits are down drastically, or you know, and our inpatient status is just about empty. You know, we're taking advantage of alternative visit routes through telemedicine and different practices like that. So,
right. And if you look at I think the New York Times has an excellent map, but county by county cases in the country, also here in Iowa. And these cases are chiefly in the urban area. So in a rural area like Clarinda, you are not only do you not have cases or have very few, do you have any cases?
There's in Page County, there's 3 cases down here.
Okay. But that the hospital, I assume, has been cleared out, your hospital and others like it, cleared out because of the lack of elective procedures and surgeries being carried out.
Yes.
Okay. So how is that impacting? I know we're in it there to save lives, to keep people healthy, but there is at some point a bottom line you have to consider. What can you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, from a financial impact, it is huge. Fortunately, the government has sought to provide different loans and different grants that are available, different opportunities through that we're working with them on transitioning some money as needed. Right now we're sitting in a good spot because we've used this time to cross-train a lot of staff to be prepared. Our role probably, if this were to get to a bad point, would be more so supportive of the larger hospital systems, and when they get inundated with patients, they may need to transfer some lower acuity patients to us or other surrounding rural hospitals. And we're open for business for that and ready to help them and support them however we can.
Mm-hmm. Is it frustrating for you and your staff? You mentioned at the beginning, sort of sitting on your hands, I think, the idea. That must be frustrating when you see a national medical emergency and it's only in certain areas and you're not... Your people are not ready to help or able to help.
Right. You know, and so I've been a nurse for 20 plus years. And, you know, when you go into this business, you go into the business for incidents like this where there's a need and you go in guns a-blazing and do whatever you got to do. I do think one of the strategies we've tried to do here is, like I said, do a lot of education, a lot of cross-training, a lot of preparing, but then also getting the staff involved in different fun events with the community, you know, of course, doing social distancing, but different celebrations we can do and whatnot, just to keep everyone informed of what's going on and keep the spirits up and keep everyone kind of motivated.
Mm-hmm. No one has a crystal ball, Chuck, but can you say, to your best knowledge, what are we looking at? Weeks, months of this for you?
You know, honestly, I think it's going to be a few weeks, and then they'll start loosening up some of the social distancing rules. And my fear, I think it's everyone's fear, is once they do that, to what extent do we see another surge? And, you know, what happens then? I think it's just this unknown. I do think that in talking with a lot of folks here in the community, this is going to change the way people, their behaviors over a long period of time. Fortunate or unfortunate, we'll see how that kind of plays out. But I think that the fear to even come to the hospital to get your routine wellness checks and whatnot right now is a little discerning, because you're putting off things that are needed. And if that becomes the norm long term, we're going to have to figure out better ways, and telemedicine is a great way to deliver that type of care, but make sure that people are still getting care and not just avoiding it because they don't want to deal with coming to the hospital.
Okay, Chuck Nordyke, Chief Executive Officer at Clarinda Regional Health Center. Thank you for giving us the picture from your health center in Southwest Iowa.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Our guests are still on. We have Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines and Cindy Fletcher of ISU Extension, tackling questions having to do with financial security and medical questions, of course, having to do with the COVID-19 epidemic. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to this question from... I guess this would be for you, Cindy. Russell on Twitter says he works in the residential mortgage industry, wondering what the short and long-term effects of this pandemic will be on the housing market, real estate values. Can you say anything to Russell's question there?
I think that's one of, among many, many unknowns, how soon the economy returns so that people are employed and can pay their bills is going to be, I think, such an important determining factor of whether or not there is are serious long-term ramifications of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. An email from CHAP mentions that Treasury Secretary Mnuchin speaks of direct payments to citizens. Please describe, he says, how to apply for such payments and when to expect the receipt. Now, I assume CHAP is referring to the CARES Act. That's the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economy Security Act. This new law, meant to address the economic fallout of the pandemic. What can you tell us about that? What are the most common questions you've been fielding there at ISU Extension, Cindy?
Well, his question, how do I apply for what many people refer to as the economic impact or stimulus payments? And the answer to that question has now been sorted out, that if any individual has had any type of income, not only earned income, over the past 2 years, they will automatically receive via direct deposit their stimulus benefit. Those amounts vary for a single person, $1,200, and then declining if income exceeds $75,000, double that for a couple, and $500 for a qualifying child. The IRS is working on developing a web portal for individuals who do not, that the IRS does not have information to make a direct deposit. So if that is the case, I would urge people to just keep watching the IRS website for that portal and then provide their direct deposit information.
That's
a great question.
Doctor, and let's throw out that Iowa Concern Hotline once again. 800-447-1985. That's for sort of more individual personal tips, feedback to your personal situation. ISU Extension specialists, over 10 of them available there to field those questions through their hotline. What a great service from ISU Extension during this time of great need. Medical question for you, Dr. Allen. This is from Jay via our IPR website. Hello, I'm pretty sure I was exposed to the virus in January. I'm a traveling nurse. Where can I get the test for antibodies?
So to my knowledge, that's not yet widely available. So I'm not, can't answer that for Iowa. I do know they are doing some testing currently. Basically trying to use the test for, just as this question references, if we can prove that a patient has antibodies to coronavirus, COVID-19 specifically, then the impression is that that person's immune to getting a secondary infection from COVID-19. They therefore would be folks that we could preferentially use to help care for patients who are experiencing active COVID-19 infections in our hospitals. And that test would also help us risk stratify patients as far as, community folks as far as whether or not they need to be extra protective as far as social distancing guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question from a listener that goes to getting carry-out food, carry-out pizza, in this case, at a convenience store. This listener remarks that at this convenience store, while picking up pizza, the people in the kitchen weren't wearing masks. On the news tonight, restaurant workers taking orders to the curb. This listener writes, no masks, sticking their heads out of the window to visit with customers, not wearing masks. Really? What's wrong with this picture? Asks the anonymous listener here. So when we're going out to get takeaway food, picking up food, what are some, I mean, you obviously want to be able to trust the source of food that you're taking out from, Dr. Allen. Can you tell us anything else about this listener's question and concerns?
Yeah, I think I can provide some at least high-level direction there. I think fundamentally the most important thing to keep in mind is the importance of social distancing. So that 6 feet of space is really the most foundationally most effective way to decrease the spread of the virus. The use of masks, particularly in the public sector, is really around certainly decreasing the spread. It's not yet a requirement. It's a recommendation, and we certainly want to encourage folks to wear those masks when they cannot maintain that social distancing space. In addition, we want to make sure that folks who are out in the public, if they are ill, they should not be. So if you're experiencing symptoms of a potential illness or symptoms that potentially could be COVID-19, and those are well known to folks at this point in time, don't be going out and stay in your homes or apartments or wherever you're at. When you're out in public, those masks are certainly appropriate if you can't maintain social distancing.
Final minutes this hour with Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines, generously giving us his time and his expertise to tackle your COVID-19 medical questions. Also, Cindy Fletcher of ISU Extension, tackling your questions about financial security. Let's get this email from Anna. This would be directed to you again, Dr. Allen. Is it safe for nurses to be traveling from different floors of the hospital and to go from treating COVID-19 patients to take care of newborns or helping provide OB-GYN services?
Well, I can't comment on the specific guidelines that the hospital where this nurse might work at are, because I think that may vary by situation or system. I know in our own hospitals, we are cohorting or certainly to the best of our ability trying to collect patients who are either persons under investigation or COVID-19 positive so as to isolate those folks from the rest of the hospital space. We are focusing on appropriate PPE depending on your interaction with the patient, whether it be COVID positive or not. And the most important thing is to continue to maintain that good hand washing technique, appropriate PPE, and base that on the type of patient you're taking care of within your hospital.
A question for you, Cindy Fletcher. In the financial area, we had several first half hour questions from those really suffering in this financial crisis. But here's a good question, looking for some direction from you. For those of us with money still coming in, what are the most effective places we should consider donating to?
That's a wonderful question. And those who are lucky enough to have continued income flowing to their household, I'd first mention double checking their own financial well-being. Is their emergency fund adequate? And that may be something to think and rethink given the uncertainties. But if there are funds available, considering sharing some of those resources. And I would look to your local community. Many communities have identified areas of high need, particularly that relate to meeting families' basic needs. And by that, food is one of the obvious ways that families can reduce their expenditures, those that are struggling, but any other way to share resources so that families who are struggling in your local community can reduce expenses, take advantage of the supports that are available. Those are are great places. One place that you might consider checking is calling the 211 number. That's a toll-free number that connects individuals with the community resources in that area. And that might be a way to identify places to donate as well.
So just dial 211 and you will be linked wherever you are to local community resources or given ideas about that.
Right. And usually they're categorized by zip codes. So that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. You talked about making sure before you donate. Wayne, we applaud your generosity and people in that position. Is your help needed at this time? Those who have continued employment and money still coming in. You talked about an emergency fund that each family or individual should have. Is there a quick way to calculate how much you should have as a cushion for hard times?
We often, in the old days, I will say, suggest having 3 to 6 months living expenses in fairly liquid, accessible sources, savings. Whether that is adequate in today's environment, I think that's something each individual or family needs to consider.
Mm-hmm. 1-866-780-9100, almost to the end of our hour. Let's see. We had a lot of questions about masks. Here's a question from one of our listeners, Dr. Allen. I don't know if you can comment about this. This person claims, why isn't the state reporting total hospitalizations? I think we just did, actually, Dennis Reese in our bottom of the hour news. The cases officially up to 1,388 in 81 counties, 119 hospitalized. Getting rapid tests. There's been progress made in the last few days, hasn't there, Dr. Allen? Some machines, some processes can give tests in less than 24 hours.
Yes, Ben, there's been some great progress in that space. And all of us, I think, are anxiously awaiting the ability for that to be brought to scale so that more tests can be done. And we are all, I think, working to try and maximize our testing capabilities by building our own, by partnering with other companies, and by getting access as soon as we can to those newly developed tests, the most valuable of which, I think, are those rapid return result tests that are coming down the pipe.
Dr. Allen, perhaps in conclusion, tell us how morale there is at Unity Point Health. Healthcare workers being seen, and rightly so, as real heroes of our epidemic here. How are people coping? How are you keeping morale up there at Unity Point Health in Des Moines?
Well, it's a great question. And fortunately, this week, we connect regularly with our physician leaders across Unity Point Health. And I was just in awe of the spirit of our physicians, APPs, and of our staff. It's evident in the way they're supporting each other in getting ready for the COVID-19 situation, as Chuck referenced, and they're also supporting each other as change is difficult. So the morale is good. We're, I think, all pulling in the same direction and learning how to really depend on each other, because we won't be able to do it in isolation. I also will say that it's also been really heartwarming to hear from our physicians that the patients who are coming to see them, either in person if they absolutely need seen or virtually, are so appreciative of the work their clinics, their hospital partners are doing in this. And that was really heartwarming for me to hear of that collective support that's out there.
Dr. Dan Allen of Unity Point Health in Des Moines, thank you for joining us this hour. We know your time is precious, and you are all precious there helping us out in the medical field. Dr. Allen, thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Take care, everybody.
Cindy Fletcher with us, professor and extension specialist in human development and family studies at Iowa State University. Thank you for your expertise, Cindy. And I want to give out that number again, the Iowa Concern Hotline, extension specialist standing by for some individual consultation, 800-447-1985. Cindy Fletcher, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is produced by Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great Easter weekend. We'll see you next week.